Save on quality sofas, sectionals, top brand mattresses, and more during Haverty's President's Day sale. Find the style of furniture you've been looking for at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
Yes, welcome into Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, the fastest 2 hours in radio. And tonight we're going to open things up in the Big 12 Conference. A couple of big-time matchups, of course, Kansas State and TCU, the Purple Powers. And who will prevail between the Bears and the Sooners? I tell you what, the Baylor-Oklahoma game, it has been circled on my calendar for quite some time, and it is a critical game in the Big 12 race. Always a pleasure to have back with us on this Friday night from Norman, Oklahoma. That is Bob Berry Jr., from News Channel 4, and of course, the Sports Animal. Good evening, Bob. It's nice to have you with us on this Friday night.
Hi, E. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. It's a very fun time of year, and I know for Oklahoma, the goal is to win the Big 12 championship. They want a shot at the playoffs, but I'm going to assume revenge will be a major motivator in this game for the Sooners because they want payback after the Bears gave them that 41-12 whipping last year in that beatdown. They were embarrassed.
I was at Floyd Casey Stadium for that one. Elissa, you couldn't have put another piece of tissue paper in that stadium. It was so crowded, and our Bios team did embarrass Oklahoma, even though Bob Stoops was asked that at his news conference this week. He said, no, I wasn't embarrassed, but every single one of his players after that that stepped up to the podium said they were absolutely embarrassed. So, yeah, I think there's going to be revenge on the mind, and yet, we all thought at the start of the year, like you mentioned, that this would be a game for the Big 12 title. We thought both of these teams would enter this game with a zero in the loss column, and that's not the case. So it becomes the second best sideshow in the league behind that game in Fort Worth between TCU and K-State you were talking about.
Well, it is a must-win for Oklahoma for them to have a shot at what the Big 12. They've had two close losses combined by, 5 points, their losses against TCU and K-State. And they want to win against a top-10 team.
They have not beaten a ranked team this year. As much as we think Oklahoma has been successful, when they beat West Virginia earlier this year in Morgantown, West Virginia was not yet ranked. And so this would be their first win against a ranked team if they get it. But if you're going to ask me what's going to happen, I have no idea which Oklahoma defense is going to show up. That's been my biggest disappointment with OU football this year, is Oklahoma's lack of success defensively. I mean, even Texas, which is a pitiful offensive team, ran up and down the field on Oklahoma at the Cotton Bowl and pushed OU around, and the Sooners were very lucky to have won that game. So it's been a mystifying group for some reason. They played well last week, but they were playing against Iowa State, and I can't get really excited about that. So I don't know. I don't know. Bryce Petty, Shaq Winwood, those guys, they could very well come down to Norman and run their way through, which would be a first win ever for Baylor and Norman. They've never won on Owen Field.
Right. We're going to talk about that some more. Are you picking, though, OU to win and to come out on top?
I am, and I don't know why. I guess because both you and I graduated from that fine institution. Maybe that's it. Maybe I'm betting on the home crowd, I guess. But I think it'll be fairly close. I do think Oklahoma's offense is playing better. Trevor Knight's had the best two games that he's played all season the last couple of weeks, and they ran the ball for a very wishbone-like 510 yards last week in Ames. So I just, for some reason, I think Oklahoma will live up to the hype and get fired up and be, you know, ready for revenge and win the game in a close one Saturday morning.
We are so glad you're with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We'd love for you to connect with us. Join us at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. And remember our podcast page, yahoosportsradio.com/podcast. Right now we're going one-on-one, taking to the hoop. That is Bob Berry Jr. from News Channel 4. But we're not talking hoops right now. We will a little bit later. We want to talk about the Oklahoma City Thunder. We're focusing in on the Oklahoma Sooners. And you had just mentioned their quarterback, Trevor Knight. He was named the Big 12 Offensive Player of the Week. He had a 6-touchdown performance, a monster game. What has he shown you, Bobby, in 2014?
Well, at the start of the year, Elissa, he was very inaccurate, and that was surprising to us because he had the game of his life in the Sugar Bowl against Alabama last year, and that's when everybody went, wow, this guy can really throw it way better than any of us thought. So we expected a carryover into this season, and he was missing throws left and right at the start of the year. So his accuracy has really picked up the last couple of weeks. That's been encouraging. Also, it's helped, you know, that some receivers have stepped forward a little bit. And yet, Sterling Shepard, who's been his star receiver all year long, got hurt, pulled a groin muscle against Iowa State. We don't know how effective he'll be against Baylor, and that's a big concern because then somebody else will be forced to be the go-to receiver. And I don't know if that person has emerged yet. So we'll see. But Trevor Knight's just made better decisions, and now we're seeing him do what we thought he should have been doing all year long, which is roll out and use his legs. He rushed for 146 yards against Iowa State. He's a very speedy runner, but it seemed like at the start of the year, Josh Heupel, the offensive coordinator, was kind of playing him as a drop-back passer, which he's really not. So he seems to be a lot more effective when he's on the move, and I would think we'll see that against Baylor.
Okay, hopefully he will be efficient, but talk to us about some more in terms of the injury update. You had just highlighted Sterling Shepard. He got injured last week. What about Keith Ford? He hasn't played since, what's the Tennessee game?
I would definitely expect to see him Saturday because he was in warm-ups on the field in Ames a week ago, ready to play. They said they could have used him, but like I said, 510 rushing yards later, they figured out they didn't need him. When they had other guys, three other backs go for over 100, including Trevor Knight. So now I think Keith Ford will definitely play. He was the best back Oklahoma had early in the season, the most versatile, running the ball, catching it out of the backfield, even blocking. So it'll be good to see Keith Ford back after 7 weeks out with an ankle problem.
Okay, you were talking about there's been some letdowns defensively for Oklahoma, and they have got to find a way to keep up with Baylor's high-powered offense. They cannot allow the Bears to get the momentum going their way early, right?
Yeah, and I wonder what Bryce Petty's going to do, which Bryce Petty's going to show up.
True.
I think he's really had a disappointing season. You know, Coach Briles in the preseason, especially at Big 12 Media Days, was so adamant on saying how the media and everybody in the country missed out on not inviting Bryce Petty to New York last year for the Heisman Trophy ceremony when Jameis Winston won the award and all of this. But Petty has had anything but a Heisman-like season this year, and I really don't know why. So I'm going to be anxious to see how Petty plays. He's been pretty vocal in his discussion about the opportunity to win in Norman. Again, Baylor's never done that, so if the good Bryce Petty shows up, that could really be a problem for Oklahoma's defense. But if the Bryce Petty that's played this year the way he has shows up, I like Oklahoma's chances a lot. I just don't think he's had a very good season.
Okay, you're listening to the voice of Bob Berry Jr. right here at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, and this is game number 9 for the Sooners. And it is kind of interesting. Let me just throw this out here. November, the home games under Bob Stoops, the Sooners are 27-1. They've won 22 straight November home games. They've been very, very successful. November's a great month in terms of that.
It is, and it goes the other way for Coach Briles. Baylor, I believe, don't quote me, but I want to say they're 0-11 on the road against ranked teams under Coach Briles on the road. So there's a lot of streaks on the line. But, again, it's just a matter of can anybody in this league play defense? And to be honest with you, I think the two teams that can do that, anyone will be playing in Fort Worth. So Oklahoma's disappointing. Baylor, you know, shows signs of being able to defend. But I'm pretty sure I saw Trevon Boykin and TCU put 58 on them in Waco at that swanky new stadium. So
yeah,
somebody's got to come up with some stops to win that game Saturday in Norman. And I think maybe Oklahoma will come up with one or two more just because of.
Okay, well, we're going to talk about that game in Fort Worth with TCU and K-State in just a moment. I got to ask you, just what's your assessment of the job that Josh Heupel has done this year?
It's been okay. I mean, you know, every coordinator gets roasted usually once or twice or 10 times a year. So, like I said, I think there's been times we've questioned his use of Trevor Knight, you know, when he should have been running him and what the quarterback run game should have been more efficient, and it has. But he's had his moments, but been bad. But the offensive line, we thought at the start of the year, would be really powerful, and they assaulted West Virginia and Morgantown early. Since then, they haven't really played that well, and then last week they got well against Iowa State. So I would give Heupel about a B-plus or C-minus, something like that.
It's already time to take our first commercial break at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. We are visiting with Bob Berry Jr., and we will be right back with much, much more. Okay, we are so glad you're with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, going one-on-one with Bob Berry Jr. from News Channel 4, and also you can listen to him on the Sports Animal in Oklahoma City. So let's transition right now. Let's talk some TCU, K-State, and as their play-by-play radio announcer Brian Estridge said, the dream lives on after that big win against West Virginia in Morgantown. That was incredible. I watched it from start to finish.
Well, Boykin's just incredible to me because I never knew where he wanted to play. Apparently, Gary Patterson didn't know where to play him for several years. I mean, whether he was a receiver, whether he was a back, whether he was a quarterback. So I give it up to Doug Meacham and Sonny Cumbie, but more than anything, Coach Patterson for saying, hey, I'm going to bring these guys in and say, install a new offense and make use of the personnel. And boy, have they found a gem in Trevon Boykin, finally getting him comfortable. I absolutely think, you know, we're talking about Bryce Petty. Trevon Boykin belongs in that Heisman Trophy talk. Petty doesn't, but Boykin most certainly does, and especially if he wins Saturday. I mean, this will be a monster victory considering how they won in Morgantown. They already won against Oklahoma and Fort Worth. So if Boykin wins Saturday, he belongs in that Heisman talk.
How do you view this game playing out? Are you favoring a TCU?
I am, because I just think they're the best team in the conference. I said that even when they lost to Baylor. I mean, there's a reason they were 21 up in the fourth quarter in Waco. I don't know what happened defensively. To be honest with you, I thought they quit being aggressive against Bryce Petty and Baylor's offense that particular day. They got away from what had earned them that lead, and then Baylor said, okay, well, if you're not going to come after us and blitz or whatever, then we're just going to score a bunch of points late, and they did, and rallied to win that game. So I think TC is the best team in the league, but we know how legendary he is as a coach. He has a team full of no-names on defense, but all they are is extremely sound. They tackle well. They don't commit penalties. So it's a matchup I can't wait to see, to be honest with you.
Okay, talking about defensively with K-State, I mean, they certainly have been so impressive, and they really hammered Oklahoma State. I mean, dissect that, break it down for us in terms of that. They picked apart the Cowboys.
Well, I can't give them a whole lot of credit for beating Oklahoma State because the Cowboys just aren't very good at all. But the win against Oklahoma and Norman impressed me because the Sooners, I think, were playing at a pretty high level there and had something to prove offensively in case they hung in there. Jake Waters, when he comes to the line, he does that little deal where he kind of runs around. You don't know if he's going to run it or throw it, and that can confuse defenses. It certainly did Oklahoma that day. So I think K-State is sneaky good offensively. Tyler Lockett's a fabulous player in the return game and at receiver. Their run game's a little better than I think people realize it with their backs and Waters when he uses his legs. So it won't be easy for TCU, but K-State's win in Norman impressed me way more than what they did against the Cowboys last week.
Okay, K-State at TCU, Saturday night, 6:30. You think Bill Snyder, Bobby, you think he's ever going to retire? 74 years of age.
I think they're going to do the Walt Disney thing with him. They're going to freeze him and put him in a, you know, some kind of locker or some kind of underground cave for years and then unfreeze him 5 or 10 years from now, let him go for some more. I mean, he's as Barry Trammell, the outstanding columnist for the Oklahoma newspaper here in Oklahoma City, he has said he not only was the coach of the millennium the first time at Kansas State, now he's the coach of the millennium twice with what he's done his second time at Kansas. I think he's the best football coach in America for what he's had to work with, and he's proving it again this year.
What makes him so successful?
Well, he knows how to discipline these guys. I mean, they just play disciplined football. They do what he asks them to do. He gets them in the right place. He gets them lined up right. They follow orders. They leave the ego at the door, I guess, because like I said, you can't really name one or two defensive guys that jump out at you, and then all they do is go, oh, they should have beat Auburn. I mean, we should be talking about them right now in the football four, the final four, and in this first playoff because of that game against Auburn, the way they held Nick Marshall and the Auburn offense in check in Manhattan. And if they hadn't have turned it over and played poorly in the red zone, they would have won that game. So it's just remarkable the discipline with which he coaches and the way his guys take to it. They never commit penalties. It seems like they rarely, if ever, turn it over. And then just look at who was on that first staff when he came to Manhattan in the late 80s, Elissa. I mean, that was Bob Stoops, Mike Stoops, Mark Mangino, Brent Venables, you know, on and on and on. Just a bunch of great football coaches. And knew him. Schneider had him in the right guys coach him up, and he's doing it again with his staff. It's incredible.
Okay, Bob Berry Jr. with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show, and our final point on our discussion is, let's get into the Oklahoma City Thunder. I mean, a tough start for
Do
the 24th. I know.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, a tough start, obviously decimated with injuries in the 2014 season. I mean, kind of break it down, give Thunder fans a sense of hope that they are going to be able to right the ship and turn things around eventually.
You try not to use the term break it down when we're talking about the Thunder because that's all they've done is break down all year long. I mean, the other night when they played in Toronto against the Raptors, they were breaking down by the possession. I mean, every time down the court, somebody was falling per trip and leaving the game. They started the game with eight healthy guys. Then Perry Jones, the former Baylor star, went down and out with a knee injury, so they were down to seven. Then Sebastian Telfair, who played in China last year, got ejected for a flagrant 2 foul late, so they were down to six. And at the end of the game, they had 3 guys with 5 fouls. So, I mean, they were 3 personal fouls away from having 3 guys available. That's it. And so it's been a bizarre season. I think it's too bad because they're very close to having a lost season, in my opinion. I mean, if they lose too many games in the rugged Western Conference, it'll be asking too much of Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and those guys to come back and win all these games in the second half just to get a good playoff position. They might exhaust their energy going into the postseason. So it's very similar in my mind to Memphis a year ago when they lost Marc Gasol for so long. They had a wonderful second half, but they were out of gas. Supposed to be in a lost season in Oklahoma City, I think.
Have you asked Coach Scott Brooks if he's going to suit up?
He definitely has in practice. I know that, and I don't know if he could go in games anymore, but he's had to in practice just to give him guys to work out, and they're taking advantage now of some special NBA exemption where if you have so many guys that miss so many consecutive games, they can add a player. So they've added some guy from Wake Forest named Ish Smith, who I think he could take in a one-on-one battle. But Ish Smith is going to be in the lineup here for the next few games. And they might even add one more player because of this special injury exemption. It's just been a bizarre start so far.
Okay, so Scott Brooks, I mean, how is he responding to all this adversity? I mean, does he have the mentality of, you know, it's next man up and other guys are going to get their reps in?
Yeah, you know, he's just said he's never seen anything like it in his 25 years. But what else can they do? I mean, even Sam Presti, the general manager, they can't do anything but just say, guys, go out and give us your best effort and let's see what happens. And hopefully we'll start getting some guys back. So maybe Anthony Morrow comes back soon. They're the guy they got in the offseason from New Orleans. Maybe Andre Robertson from Colorado, the second-year kid who was starting, maybe he comes back from a foot injury soon. So they're a week away, maybe, 2 or 3 days away, maybe, from having 2 or 3 more healthy bodies, which will help them. I tell you what, the Oklahoma City crowd, when they played Denver in their third or fourth game of the season a week or so ago, they came home 0-2 off a road trip, and the crowd gave them a standing ovation when they had a 12-point lead after the quarter. They were ahead at half by 20. I gave them another standing ovation. It was the best crowd that we've ever seen at an NBA home game around here, and Scott Brooks said he'd never seen anything like it in all of his NBA days, and the Thunder ended up winning the game huge. So at least the fans understand this weird circumstance that this team's going through, and they're responding in a really favorable way. So I think the Thunder will be good at home regardless of how many bodies they have.
Okay, you've been listening to the voice of Bob Berry Jr. from News Channel 4 this evening at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We have covered it all, the Big 12, and even touched on some NBA. You stay healthy. Don't you get sick or get injured, okay, Bob?
Don't say breakdown, but I'm going to break up with you and end this phone call right now. He always loved listening to your show. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Very much.
Much more straight ahead tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Okay, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am your host, Elissa Walker Campbell. And the college football conversation, it continues. Time now to focus on the SEC and the Arkansas Razorbacks. No doubt the Razorbacks, I would say, my estimation, we've talked about it on the show, they are perhaps one of the most improved teams in the country. And I would say if they played in the SEC East or another conference, they certainly would have a better record than 4-5 and 0-5 in the SEC. Joining us on the Stuart Cadillac guest line is Rick Schaefer. He is the author, a former sports information director at the University of Arkansas. Was there 24 years. Of course, he is joining us. Rick is joining us on the Stuart Cadillac guest line. Stuart Cadillac, real people, real value, real simple. Good evening. How are you, Rick, on this Friday night? How are things in Arkansas?
Well, great. It's a wonderful Friday night in Arkansas because there's an exhibition basketball game and no football game this weekend. And yeah, you're right. The Razorbacks are one of the most improved teams in the country. But the record doesn't show it because of who they've played against. So this is a welcome open date for them. Tomorrow night we'll watch Alabama play LSU. LSU comes to Fayetteville the next week. And hopefully that's the game where Arkansas can break through against one of these ranked teams.
Well, it is hard to believe. I mean, when you look at the record, Arkansas, they've had 17 straight conference games that they've lost, dating back to 2012. But this is a team that cannot be overlooked, and they are very dangerous. What is the missing link?
Probably just the belief that they are going to win. When Bobby Petrino was fired as coach, justifiably by athletic director Jeff Long, it happened after seasons in which Arkansas won 10 games and 11 games. The following year, there were a few specialty players back, but the coaching turmoil, it was too late in the year to hire a permanent head coach, so John L. Smith did the best he could. Well, then by the time Brett Bielema got here, frankly, the cupboard was pretty dry. So, you know, as you look at the losses in 2012, all of last year, the last three games last year were very close. Some of the earlier games were routes. This year, there aren't many routes. Georgia took a big lead on Arkansas at halftime, but part of that was because of three turnovers by the Razorbacks. After that, the Hogs at least made it respectable. The other four losses in the SEC, Arkansas has led in the fourth quarter. And so you'd have to say they've had a chance in the teams they've played. Texas A&M was sixth at the time. Auburn was ranked number five at the time. Alabama was ranked in the top five at the time. And Mississippi State was ranked number one. And the Razorbacks led them 10-0 at one time and led in the third quarter. So, you know, you're talking about playing great competition. But I think just believing you can get over that is the biggest thing. Against Mississippi State, Arkansas went inside their 20-yard line twice in the fourth quarter and didn't score. you got to get points in those situations.
You know, there are a lot of positives, though, about Arkansas. I mean, they feature one of the best rushing attacks in the SEC. Yeah. What, they rank fourth in the league?
Yeah, they've got two really good backs, Jonathan Williams and Alex Collins. Had a third back, Corliss Marshall, who was suspended for four games on a university matter, not an athletic matter, but he's back. He'll be back for LSU. He's probably the fastest of the three. Good-sized offensive line. In fact, it's bigger than the biggest line in the NFL when you take the starting offensive line. Now, that doesn't always equate to quality. There's some younger guys on that line that are getting better every week. You know, this is a team that's really built for 2015 and 2016.
Mm-hmm.
But they're playing in 2014 with younger guys and getting that experience, and they're still hoping they're going to get a win or two. But, yeah, it's a good rushing attack. And this offensive line's also been good protecting the passer when Brandon Allen has thrown, and he's thrown for over 200 yards in each of his last four games because he's only suffered 10 sacks all year, and seven of them were in two games, Alabama and Georgia.
Of course, Rick Schaefer is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're going to highlight his new book that is out, 100 Things Arkansas Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. But I got to ask you, I mean, tell us about the job that Brett Bielema has done so far, because he certainly has made made Arkansas a very competitive team.
He's a player's coach who also believes in discipline. And sometimes you get the coaches who are disciplinarians, and the players feel like they can't go talk to him, or the player's coaches who the players get away with everything. He's got that solid ground where the players know he cares very deeply for them. He hurts for them when they lose. There was one of the games this year, after the Alabama game, he was in near tears in his post-game press conference because he hurt that Arkansas played that well against a team that good and didn't win.
Mm.
He and his staff have done a remarkable recruiting job when you consider the lack of success the last two or three years. He's got having Randy Shannon on his staff is huge in recruiting Florida. And so they're getting players out of Florida that Arkansas has never gotten out of that area before. There are 10 players in the state of Arkansas they offered scholarships to this year, including several that recruiting people. You know, you only get into three or four or five stars. That's somebody else's business. But three of them are four-star prospects. All 10 are committed to the University of Arkansas. And even in a state like Arkansas, you think, well, the Razorbacks usually get their own. There have been a few years in recent past where they have not, so that's a big deal, too. And so, yes, he's rebuilding things. He believes that he and his staff can lead Arkansas to winning a Southeastern Conference championship. They've played in the SEC championship game three times but never won it, and so that would be something that's never happened since the Hogs went into the SEC. And he's just got a believability about him. But Arkansas fans, I think, really think he'll get this done.
Well, and that's got to be so tough on him personally. I mean, when you look at Brett Bielema and his resume, just the success that he had at Wisconsin. I mean, what, three consecutive Rose Bowl appearances?
Yeah, and it does take his toll. And he's been asked, any regrets? And he said no. He wanted to come to the SEC. Arkansas is a good job. It enjoys statewide support. And he's glad he's here. I think the thing that he learned when he got to the University of Arkansas that he probably wasn't aware of is how fast the SEC is. I think he came to Arkansas and looked at the team speed the Razorbacks had and thought, you know, this is pretty good. I think we can win with them, until he saw what they were up against. And so his first two recruiting classes, he's gone for more speed. You're taking some young guys that are playing that are faster, and this current recruiting class that he'll end up signing will be faster. I think that's the biggest adjustment that he had to make from going to the Big Ten and the SEC, is just how the team speed that everybody in this league has.
How willing are Razorback fans willing to be patient and work the process? Because it really does seem like he knows what it takes to get that winning formula. He's just got to get his recruits in it, and it's just going to take some time.
If you talk to people around college football, which I suspect you do on a syndicated radio show, you know that fans are at every school in America have very little patience. You know, at Arkansas, they understand from what went through from the time Petrino was gone to where they are now. But I would say, now, Bielema's got a great contract. The buyout's outrageous, so he's not going anywhere. And the administration has 100% confidence in him, so that's not an issue. But when you're talking about fans, I think by the third year, most fan bases expect things to start accelerating. Now, the thing that Bielema is going to have to do is not only get more speed in the program, but build depth. That's where the Alabamas, every year, Alabama, LSU, Auburn now, they've got deep programs. If they lose a starter, they got somebody else ready to take over. Arkansas' starting line is pretty good, but you need to build some depth. So I think Arkansas fans know that that's coming. I think overall they definitely believe in Bielema. He's a very likable guy. But like anywhere else, I think next year, which is the third season, people are going to expect, hey, you need to be in a bowl game next year. So we'll see.
Well, and hopefully they'll knock off one of those Goliaths in the SEC. So go ahead and quickly tell us about 100 Things Arkansas Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. It is certainly the ultimate resource guide for true Arkansas fans.
Well, I hope it is. I worked at the athletic department for 24 years and was a Razorback fan for many years before that. And there's a guy named Bob Chain who I had a chance to, I've known him for years, and he was the sports information director at the Arkansas. He was the first one they ever had from 1948 through 1968. So when you look at that book, it's really the compilation of both of our understanding of the Razorback program and memories. Bob was in ill health. I talked to him 5 weeks before he passed away. Didn't know he was going to pass away. And many of the stories in there are his stories, and I'd never heard him before. I've known Bob for years, but never really questioned him about a lot of things. Bob actually knew three players that played on the first team ever at Arkansas, which was in 1894.
Oh my.
So when you're talking about his recollections and his memories combined with mine, basically you've got from 1894 to today, and it was a pleasure talking to several former Razorbacks for it. I think there's some real entertaining stories in there that anybody that likes Arkansas athletics will enjoy.
Well, it is a compelling read. 100 Things Arkansas Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. And Rick Schaefer has been joining us on our Stewart Cadillac guest line for the latest deals and models. Check out StewartCadillac.com. We will talk to you again real soon. Thank you so much, Rick. Have a wonderful Friday night.
All right, Alyssa. Thank you.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead at YSR. Okay, the Big E Sports Show, it rolls on with the biggest and the very best in sports. And 1 week ago, I was in San Antonio for the Spurs home opener with the Mavericks and had the opportunity to catch up with our good friends from ProjectSpurs.com. That is Jeff Garcia. Jeff Garcia, of course, is joining us on our Stewart Cadillac guest line. Real people, real value, real simple. How are you, Jeff?
I'm doing great. And by the way, it was really good to see you the other night.
Thank you. It was wonderful to be back in San Antonio. Always a great city. And I have to say that this is going to be another year of big expectations. But there's already been some highs and some lows. It seems like your Spurs have kind of eased into the season. I mean, I was getting a bit worried for you with that 2-5 performance from the preseason. Should Spurs fans be concerned at all?
Yeah, there is some concerns right now. I guess the big concern right now from the Spurs is in the first three games of the season, they cost the ball over 20-plus times. Last night versus the Hawks, I'm sorry, the recent game versus the Hawks, 21 turnovers. And, of course, against the Mavericks, they cost it up quite a bit. Not only is their kind of their chemistry is kind of off right now with injuries. There was an early injury to Kawhi Leonard with the eye infection. Thiago Splitter was out with his nagging injuries, and that kind of threw the chemistry off as well. So you kind of saw them kind of convoluted, discombobulated early on. And, of course, against the Hawks as well, they looked like just could not find the rhythm. I don't know if that's kind of some hangover from the championship season or is it simply just injuries. They just cannot get a set rotation. But, look, it's early in the season. It's just worked for the Spurs three games into this new season. So there's a lot of time to kind of fix the errors, and they know that. I actually spoke with Austin Day prior to the Atlanta game, and he admitted to me that, look, the team knows. They know that there's some errors that they're doing that is uncharacteristic of the team. But they're working on it, they're fixing on it, and he just links back to the fact that they're just not healthy at full strength.
You know, Jeff, I had a chance to watch that game on Wednesday night. I stayed up for it, and the Spurs prevailed, and they come away with that two-point win. But, you got to give a lot of credit to the Hawks. I mean, they really came after them. But hasn't, just in the years past, I mean, the Spurs have kind of just always eased into their season a bit before they get into rhythm, get into sync, and everybody gets on the same page.
Well, yeah, you know, a few years ago, it was the storyline for the Spurs was this. They come out of the gate slow, road trip, post-All-Star break.
Right.
And they have this amazing run. In the last 2 years, it's actually been the opposite. They come out like gangbusters, losing 3-4 games, go on some ridiculous double-digit winning streak, and they're sitting pretty at the All-Star break. Not this year. They come out of the gate a little slow. There's a part of me, and I'm not saying that I spoke to anybody about this. But I want to go back to Kawhi Leonard with his contract issues, and now they're going to wait, and he will be a restricted free agent. One of the things that I looked at is how would it affect his psyche? How would he feel? Would he finally understand the business side of the NBA? And in the game against Atlanta, he just didn't look like Kawhi Leonard. He, you know, couldn't inbound a pass. He got violated for turnover, taking too long, just violating the five-second rule. And just looks like he hasn't found his shot, hasn't found his rhythm. It would be different if maybe he was out because he had a strained groin or he had an Achilles issue. Fine, but he was just out for an eye infection, pink eye. So I don't know if that's kind of weighing on him right now. Maybe he feels a little slighted by San Antonio, the fact that they did not give him the max contract that he wanted.
Were you surprised that they did not offer him the max contract? And why are they allowing one of the best young players in the NBA to become a restricted free agent?
I was a little surprised. I thought that for sure that they were going to offer him a good deal. I don't know about the max, because how often do you hear the Spurs giving max deals aside, unless your name is Tim Duncan or David Robinson? Kawhi Leonard is a very young, up-and-coming player. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. But when I take a step back and look at it and I take off my Spurs glasses, I always wonder, is Kawhi really a franchise player? Is he a type of player to carry a team to the NBA Finals? Now, I'm not saying the Spurs don't doubt that he isn't. I'm pretty sure he can with the right pieces around him. But he's very young. His ceiling is still high. And I also believe it's just the Spurs being the Spurs financially. Financially, they're always keeping their eye on the bigger goal. With Duncan and Manu Ginobili maybe coming off the books for retirement after this season, that's going to free up a tremendous amount of money for San Antonio to go out and get the right players to surround Kawhi Leonard, if that falls into place. Also, you have to add the fact that the new TV deal kicked in, the reported NBA, salary cap is going to bump up to $90 million. That may have had a factor as well. But when you're looking at the other players that got max deals recently, your Klay Thompson, your Alec Burks, I can see why Kawhi maybe feel a little slighted, but if he's thinking in the right frame of mind, he could be looking at a larger payout come the end of this summer. Only problem is he'll be a restricted free agent, and the Spurs got to match any offer, including the terms, that any other team throws at him.
Hey, Jeff Garcia is with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Of course, check his work out at Project Spurs, projectspurs.com. He is joining us on our Stewart Cadillac guest line. And we're zeroing in on Kawhi Leonard, of course, the finals MVP. Let's not forget, Jeff, I mean, he averaged 27 points in those final three games. I mean, what's not to like about him? I mean, he is an emerging star.
You're right. And what sets him apart from any of the other young players that recently got big deals was that he's actually a good two-way player. He's a proven defender, and he's a proven offensive player. Heading from into the NBA from San Diego State, the big thing on him was he's just a pure defender. He was not known for his offensive skills. And what happened, goes into the Spurs, gets under the wing of Coach Pop, Coach Chip England, and he becomes an offensive threat. So, yeah, you're right. There's nothing wrong. There's nothing not to like about Kawhi. It's just a matter of, I think the Spurs are just being fiscally responsible right now. They're a small market. They don't have the deep pockets like your Lakers, your New Yorks, your Chicago's. So this is just the Spurs being the Spurs. Now, the question comes this. Will Kawhi follow in the footsteps of other, quote-unquote, franchise players
that
Spurs have had? Will he give San Antonio a hometown discount? Will he do what Robinson did, leave some money on the table to go out and get players for that championship run? Will he do what Tim Duncan did and not ever get paid his true value for the good of the team? That remains to be seen. But at least from reports that came out from Kawhi's camp, is that the two sides are far apart. Now, that could be posturing. You know, his agent also mentioned that there are a lot of teams interested in Kawhi, obviously. But, is that more posturing between the two sides? But as of right now, they really got to just stop focusing on the business side and just focus on the court, because this might be the Spurs' final chance to finally do something they've never done, is repeat as NBA champs.
Well, the Spurs are an organization that place a high value on managing a team, keeping it intact. I mean, that's evidenced by their returning this year, 14 of their players. But when will this roster, Jeff, when is it ever going to get younger?
You know, if you're starting to see, you know, the Spurs have been doing a quiet youth movement. And if you really take a step back, look what they added. They've added Kyle Anderson over the summer of the NBA draft. They've added Kawhi Leonard. We know about him. Tony Parker is still relatively young. He's in his prime still. So he has another good 5-6 years left in his tank. You also look also around him as well. Look at Thiago Splitter. You know, he may not be in your 20s, but he's your 30 years old. He's still got a few more years under his belt. And let's not forget this. The Spurs also have a lot of forward assets stashed away in Europe. Very young players that are up and coming out in the EuroLeague, your Davis Bertans, your Adam Hongas. These guys, you know, could be making some noise in the years to come for San Antonio. And you're going to hear it again and again if that does pan out. The Spurs did it again. They find an overseas gem. Where were the other scouts? How does the Spurs do it? So you're seeing a quiet youth movement. You're not seeing a very aggressive one. But I think you're going to see him peak now if Duncan and Manu hang it up and call it a career.
Jeff Garcia with Project Spurs. ProjectSpurs.com is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. He's joining us on the Stuart Cadillac guest line. And I got to ask you, I mean, how close to retirement are some of those in the Big Three, like Timmy Duncan?
You know what? I was actually shocked he didn't announce it last season after the Spurs won the title. And I know, and heading into camp, he did admit that he was close. He almost just dropped the bomb on the entire NBA world and say, I'm done. But he didn't. He's going to go for the one more college try, if you will, for that elusive repeat. I think he's going to, if they do win it, I would not be shocked if he gets on that podium, raises his sixth NBA championship ring in the future and say, what more do I have to prove?
Well, the Spurs' goals are certainly set very high as they look to win consecutive titles. Their fifth title last year, fifth title in 15 years. It's been incredible. And, of course, so many questions in terms of can they dominate like they did last year in the finals if they do advance. Always a pleasure to catch up with our friends from ProjectSpurs.com. Awesome website and always an awesome guest. Thank you so much, Jeff. And I promise we'll see you again real soon. Perhaps we'll go out and have some Mexican food together, okay?
No, you got it. You got it. Thank you again.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead. And YSR, the Big Sports Show. You stay close.
Save on quality sofas, sectionals, top brand mattresses, and more during Haverty's President's Day sale. Find the style of furniture you've been looking for at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.